Welcome to lucky episode 13 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. Joining me as always, Jeff Smith in Seattle, or near Seattle.
Hello.
Hi. And Everard Okimi from...
Beautiful sunny Arizona, thank you.
That's right. And we also have a guest this week, Jeff number two. Howdy.
Yeah, that's me. Hi, how are you?
Jeff number two is coming to us from our forum, where you can also figure out how to get on our podcast if you'd like. Let's jump right into it. Jeff number one, I feel like I'm on the dating show, you know? Bachelor number one. I think you owe us a little rendition of a song here. We'll get this out of the way.
Well, just for the record, Jeff, you don't owe me anything, so...
Not a meal or anything like that?
No.
He owes you drinks, though.
Yeah.
So, crank it up here.
All right, let's get this darn song over with.
Start singing, man.
Oh, I thought you were going to start the music.
Oh, okay, I can do that. Here you go, background vocals for you.
Here we go.
You singing, Jeff? Come on.
Here we go.
Here we go. Steelers, here we go.
Steelers gonna start. I don't know what I'm saying.
Now, you had a responsibility to live up to this bet here, and I think I'm gonna have to ask you to do it again next week because that was just bad. But we'll let it slide for now.
All right.
Admittedly, I haven't been following a lot of golf lately. Had I been watching golf a little more, I would have seen Tiger Woods earn his second win of the year in two tries, both in playoffs, both over pretty good players, Ernie Els here in Dubai. You know, admittedly, probably with his B or C game. So is this going to be a record-breaking year for Tiger Woods? Or
it is if all the other players keep slacking off like they have been. I mean, again, you know, like you said, Tiger's been playing with his B or C game, and all these other players are, I don't want to say they're handing it to him, but they're certainly not letting him compete for the win.
That's true. Two for two, both in playoffs.
I agree with that. I think Ernie Els handed it to him, gone for the green with his second shot. I think he should have laid back and played a little bit more conservatively.
Yeah, I think that's what we're seeing. You know, we talked last week about how, you know, Woods has got the intimidation factor. And, you know, I think that may be part of it, but I mean, folks just need to step up and just do it. I mean, Tiger's won two events, and I think they were given to him. You know, folks need to get in there and just fight it out and, you know, give the guy at least some kind of competition.
Could be, yeah. Ernie Els play foreshadowing the Seahawks eventual play in the Super Bowl there.
Oh, poor guy.
Moving on here.
Please.
Speaking of which, we actually had over here in sunny Arizona, there was the FBR Open that just took place for the 20th time over at... Hey, I got to keep rubbing that in, man. So it was actually cool to see J.B. Holmes pull out. I like seeing new winners. I like seeing fresh blood. Despite not having Tiger there or some other popular names, there were still some good pros there, and it was just really cool to see a big hitter do it, too. The crowds loved him, too.
Seems like a affable guy, Cobra staff member. I agree. Good to see him back. You think flash in the pan, or you think he'll be around for a while?
I think he'll be around. I mean, he's shown a lot of game, and when they were dissecting some of his game and some of the slow swing analysis, you know, they showed some of the typical flaws that a long hitter would normally have, and JB doesn't have that. He actually has a good short game, and he putts pretty decent, so as long as he can keep those two fairly consistent, that long game's going to just tremendously help him out.
I agree, and I think changing his name from whatever it was before that was the porn guy's name to JB Holmes.
Yeah, he used to be John Holmes.
That's right. I'm waiting for, never mind. I'm not even going to get into it. Speaking of, no, I'm not going to go there either. Michelle Wee versus the Cuts. Jeff, we got an interesting little link here.
Yeah, we've got a really good article here, and Michelle Wee, there's some statistics that a link will provide for you. Michelle Wee versus the Cut, a statistical analysis, and basically what we're doing is breaking down par 3s, par 4s, par 5, and her performance on each of them. I was pretty interested to see that she is doing better than the field, but obviously not good enough to make the cut. For instance, on par 3s, her proximity to the hole was 38 feet, just a little over 38 feet, and then those who made the cut were at 29, or just almost 30 feet. So she's got some ground to make up there. She was just a little over par playing par threes, and then on the par four, she was hitting 51, about a little over 51% of her greens in regulation, while players making the cut were hitting 63%. So you can kind of see this trend. What I thought was interesting is that she is playing better than the field, but she has got some tightening up to do if she's going to start making cuts.
Yeah, we can see. you know, proximity to the hole. Her average score on the par 3s was 0.1, basically strokes higher. So 0.1 times the 4 par 3s you typically encounter, that's half a stroke. You can kind of go through and add these up. She's 0.14 over the average on the par 4s, you know, times 10. You know, there's 1.4 strokes. Added that to the 0.4 before, she's now 2 strokes over. Yeah. You can go right on down through to find out, you know, where she can make up shots pretty much in every kind of hole. It's not her lack of distance necessarily, because she's 10 yards shorter than average necessarily that's throwing it, but, you know, she's not hitting greens. Her accuracy is fine. Her putting is pretty close, except on the par 4s.
Well, if she's one of the shorter, obviously she's a shorter hitter, but she's not more accurate. I mean, you know, you got short hitters like Funk. He's up at the top in accuracy. She's not as accurate, you know, so she's really, really reaching out there. And still one of the shorter hitters, but she's not more accurate because of it.
Kind of the worst of both worlds. She's short and inaccurate.
Yep.
Relative to guys making a cut. Check that out, and you know, there are some that think she'll never make a cut on the men's tour. You know, I think, like I said, a million monkeys and a million, you know, attempts, someone will eventually make one. She's as likely
to anyone. I think she'll do it.
I think she will too, but I don't think she should be trying.
She's only 16 years old. She's got a lot of time to mature and work on her game. I think we're going to see her playing men's events for a while. I don't think that's the right thing. I think she should be focusing on junior events and maybe LPGA cuts, but I think she's going to be around for a while.
Well, I think so too, but like you said, I don't think she'll be winning any men's events anytime soon. And I mean, be honest, what's the real goal of entering a golf tournament? It shouldn't be to make the cut. We'll be right back after this ad from our sponsor Titleist, as well as the Golf Gods Chip Shots segment.
To hit the ball more solid off the tee, you need to swing at a pace you can't control and catch the ball right in the middle of the club face.
You want to hit it a little bit longer, try moving it up in your stance just a little.
You got to complete your backswing.
Try a little pause at the top.
Try a bigger shoulder turn.
Grip it more in the fingers and less in the palm.
If you want to hit it big, you got to swing big.
And the most important tip of all,
trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
That was a good shot, too.
From the studios of GolfGods.com in Minneapolis, this is Chip Shots, a weekly look at golf equipment news, brought to you by the staff of GolfGods.com, the official online pro shop of TheSandTrap.com. This week on Chip Shots, you can't always get what you want. A recent post to the TheSandTrap.com forum posed an interesting question. The forum member asked how to choose between a $99 push cart from Bag Boy and a more expensive $180 cart from Sun Mountain. The conundrum he faced is a good one to investigate. Fundamentally, the golfer must always choose between price and performance. The main question is how much of this decision is real and how much of it is subtle coercion by marketing mavens trying to grab a few dollars. We told the buyer, who we'll call Maverick for this exercise, to think of the decision in terms of buying a car. Since carts are organized by price, from around $40 for a cheap cart to around $200 for a state-of-the-art push cart, with a little homework and an old-fashioned legal pad, you can usually figure out what extra features drive up the cost. Remember, it's the job of the marketer to get you to spend more, so once you determine the overall cost range, you can start to match your budget and your needs with what you're getting. Back to the car analogy. Let's use Toyota as an example. When you buy a Corolla, you get a solid, dependable car. When you step up to the Camry, you get the same reliability with more creature comforts. It's the same with these carts. For $100, the quality and performance will be more than adequate. The value judgment should be, how much am I willing to pay for the extra comfort? What are the main differences between the $100 cart and the $180 cart? It boils down to three areas: functionality, add-ons, and style. Since these carts are slightly larger than a baby stroller, the ability to fold, the final folded size, and the ease of breakdown are the core factors. The more expensive carts are easier to fold, and the smaller the folded size. If you have limited space, it may be only the more expensive carts will fit your needs. Regarding adjustability, the more expensive carts will have more possibilities. This can make pushing the cart for 18 holes more comfortable. The nicer models also have hand brakes. The cheaper versions have foot-activated brakes. The nicer carts usually have more innovative adjustable mechanisms to hold your bag. The less expensive carts usually just have webbing and a buckle. If you're looking for add-ons, expect features like umbrella holders, more deluxe scorecard caddies, and extra valuable storage on the higher-end models. There are generally no add-ons for the less expensive carts. When image is everything, the $99 carts are made to look like $99 carts. The $180 carts are more slick-looking. The padding, components, and paint jobs are nicer with more detail. Does it add to the performance? Not likely, but hey, everyone likes to look good. So where did Golf Gods steer Maverick? We felt, after looking at the options, if Maverick was committed to the idea of walking a lot, the nicer cart was the better value. If he only planned to use it occasionally, we said, save the dough and buy the $100 cart. Well, that's it for Chip Shots this week, brought to you by the staff of GolfGods.com. Now back to this week's podcast.
Thanks for that, Golf Gods, and welcome back. This week in our listener or forum topic, we have two double dose of our forum topic for you this week. The first one is someone asked, who is your favorite player and why?
That was me.
That was you, Mini Jeff. So yeah. I hadn't clicked over to that tab yet, but your choices were Nick Faldo, Tiger Woods, Viejas, and Luke Donald.
Yeah.
Viejas?
I think that's how you pronounce his name. I think it's mispronounced on TV.
How do they pronounce it on TV?
They say Viejas. Camilo Viejas.
Viejas, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds kind of gringo to me. But anyways, Camilo is, I think he's the future of golf. I love to see these young guys like J.B. Holmes, we just talked about him. And these guys are just whale on it, but they can also play. Like, Camilo really likes to work the ball both ways. I think once he gets some confidence on tour, he's going to be a big player.
Go ahead. I'll interrupt you later.
That's it, I'm done.
Okay, well, see, my problem with people, anyone saying the future of golf is, you know, unless you're looking at a 15-year-old kid, I think Tiger Woods is the future of golf. You know, I mean, does anyone see him stepping down in the next 10 years?
Well, I don't think Camilo will ever be as dominant in the sport as Tiger, but I think he's going to win some tournaments, maybe two, three a year.
Okay.
He'll be a player out there.
But, I mean, that's like saying, you know, Phil Mickelson is the future of golf, because he'll do that for the next 8 years, too. So, I don't know, it's tough for me to see anybody as the future of golf other than Tiger Woods for the next 10 years.
I can kind of agree with that statement if you're looking at someone under the age of 30.
Okay. My four were Tiger Woods, Vijay Singh, Paul Azinger, because I like to watch him play, and Davis Love, who may bump himself off the list if he doesn't actually win anything in the next couple months. And Jeff and Everard, your lists were who?
I picked Tiger, of course. I mean, obvious reasons for Tief Goosen, Silky Smooth, Vijay Singh, and Kenny Perry. Just great players.
Kenny Perry, not really Silky Smooth.
Kenny Perry. Kenny Perry has a swing only his mother could love, is what I think I wrote in the... But, you know, I just like him because he's a really neat guy. He's got a unique swing. I mean, he's kind of my other pick.
Right. Everardo?
I'd have to put Luke Donald on my list. Fred Couples definitely would have to be up there. Annika Sorenstam and Paula Creamer.
See, now Luke Donald puzzles me. He hasn't won since 2002, right, Jeff? You just wrote an article.
No, he won...
Not on the PGA Tour.
He won the Tiger World Challenge last year.
Which semi-counts, you know, or something. But, you know, 2002 on the PGA Tour, and he's pretty much played a full schedule since then.
But look at him yesterday. He shot a 62 at the Spyglass.
Is he going to hold on? Record.
That's the question. We'll have to see.
I mean, the Spyglass is an accurate course, so his distance, or lack thereof, didn't play into it too much.
Well, it's the longest of the three courses they play this week.
Yeah, but it's one of the accurate ones. Which is why people were surprised that Phil Mickelson played well there last year. So,
well, here's a question for you guys. I mean, are you guys? It's from the sounds of it. I mean, are you guys picking your favorite pros based off of their winning percentage, their win status, or just the pro themselves?
I wouldn't have picked
Azinger. That's kind of how I have.
I wouldn't have picked Azinger if it was off win percentage only. Obviously,
right?
You know, any guy that beats cancer and has his attitude. You know, I just like the guy. You know, Nick Price would have been fifth on my list because I liked watching him 10 years ago when I was really starting to get into golf and he was winning major after major and stuff. So,
well, at least for me, and that's how I picked Luke Donald, is I like the guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. I mean, you know, I mean, obviously Tiger Woods, I mean, he's the winner of the group there, and Vijay Singh, but I picked them because of their unique personalities.
All right. Our second forum topic is for the past 5 or 6 years anyway, the ever-present debate, Tiger or Annika?
Well, if you're just picking simply off of the paper, just looking at stats and so on.
The question was, who is more dominant?
Yeah, and it's Annika. Annika right now is a more dominant. I mean, last year she won 50% of the events that she entered. And so it's unquestionable that right now she is more dominant within her sport. Is she the better competitor? That's a different question.
Dave did a numbers game article on these guys that we'll add to the links as well that shows their winning percentages, top 3 percentages, top 10 percentages, and whatnot through the years. And Annika beats Tiger pretty handily. 70.56% of her starts, she finishes in the top 10, compared to Tiger Woods at 64.7%. So a 6% advantage there. It's tough to say, but I voted for Tiger because I think Annika's level of competition isn't nearly as good. Really,
I did the same thing.
Really not the way you're supposed to vote in these kind of things, because Annika is is more dominant. But, you know, I could go either way on that one. She's more dominant, but Tiger has tougher competition, I think.
Not this year, at least.
Time will tell. No, not this year. Not in playoffs, anyway. Time will tell, though, if these guys, how they do. We'll be right back after this second ad from Titleist.
For a crisper long iron, grip up on it about an inch.
Be real aggressive through impact.
Keep it short and aggressive.
Maintain your balance.
Take one more club and swing it smooth.
Think happy thoughts.
For a soft draw, close your stance and make sure you release the club.
I'm going to lounge my feet to the right a little bit.
Hook the club face, then grip the club.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And one more tip. Trust your tightness.
Oh, that's got to be it, guys. Come on, that's a perfect shot.
And welcome back. This is our
Thanks, Douglas, for that ad.
This is our beating balls segment. You got to let me finish, boy from Arizona. Now I can go. Talk about your...
I just like talking about my state. I love it. So, speaking of it...
Confusion, right?
The FBR Open broke records again for the amount of crowd that they had there. Total count for the week was just over half, or 536,000. That included a record on 168,000 on Saturday alone. And talking to the tournament directors and during all the interviews that they've had, there's plenty of room for it to grow. With all the development that's going around the course, parking is not going to be an issue for the next couple of years. Grandstands, walking area, I mean, there's just plenty of room for the crowds to grow out there. And what's an interesting stat is in the 20 years that they've had it now at the TPC of Scottsdale, they've grown by 109% from the original crowds that they've drawn. So,
well, it's basically the PGA Tour's frat party of the year, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
So,
and a lot of the players love that atmosphere.
And since Arizona doesn't have a professional football team to speak of.
That's right, we don't.
The fact that it's hosted on Super Bowl Sunday really doesn't matter a whole lot, I guess.
It really doesn't matter.
I wonder how many people watched the final round on TV. I mean, it was over mostly before the Super Bowl started, but I really wonder, kind of a bad scheduling thing.
But again, it's never really been an issue. I mean, unless you're going to watch the 5 hours of pregame shows,
which I did.
The golf game is not going to really interfere.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Right.
We had an article last year about, you know, someone said the crowds, you know, the boisterous crowds at the 16th and stuff were good for golf.
I agree with that.
Mentality. Well, I wrote a response to that saying I didn't necessarily agree with that, but Everett, what do you think?
I like the crowds. I mean, it's fun to see players react differently to having a crowd, and that's why you have a lot of players that won't attend the FBR because they're not used to having such a huge gallery, or like on the 16th, they're not used to playing in a stadium atmosphere, and pretty much that whole entire green, they're going to start putting in more bleachers to almost completely surround it now.
Yeah.
And some players just get extremely nervous and tense up, and it's fun to see them react like that.
It's fun to see them screw up.
I want to see these guys under pressure.
I do too. I agree with Everardo. I think that having to perform under pressure like that really separates the field a little bit.
And that's why it was so cool to see a rookie do it.
Well,
and then, you know, last year, or I'm sorry, 2 years ago with Jonathan Kay. I mean, it's just cool to see. Jonathan Kay is actually a local guy, but it's just cool to see these new guys that maybe they're used to pressure from their sports or from how they grew up playing the golf. So I love it.
Well, you know, it delivers to golf what a lot of people are looking for. Interest generates buzz. I mean, yeah, the fans are not the kind of, I mean, many of these guys are not, you know, hardcore golf fans, but they're out there having a good time, and it's generating money, buzz to the tour, which are all good things for the game of golf, which, you know, it's a good thing, I think.
All right. Let's move into a non-love fest. And that is Michael Campbell's opinion of Tim Fincham. He's petitioning, basically asking Tim Fincham to uplift the ban or restriction he has on only being allowed to play 10 PGA Tour sanctioned events in a year, based due to the fact that Campbell didn't play the required number of events in 2003. We talked about this last week. It'll be interesting to see how Tim Fincham treats this petition or request. You know, do you think he should overturn it or uphold the rules? Real quick.
I think it's a legitimate petition, and I think we should treat it somewhat like it should be treated somewhat like you know, Pressel and we getting to play early in LPGA events. It's the same thing. Petition, and then he responds. I think it's so legitimate for him to do so.
Everardo, yes, no.
Yes.
And Mini Jeff?
No.
No.
I don't think that just because he won the US Open, he made a commitment earlier to play 15 events. He didn't follow through with that commitment, and therefore he should be penalized. Just because he won a major doesn't mean they should change the rules for him.
Okay. Very good. Moving on. Ball marks. This is our quick segment, so ball marks here. There's a study, we'll link to this. It's interesting to see how many people either don't repair ball marks or do it incorrectly or so on. You know, if you poorly repair a ball mark, that can lead to persistent scars and overall poor turf quality and play. They find basically that poor technique, not the traditional repair tool, are at fault. You know, we'll link to my home course. The superintendent has videos and stuff on his website about how to repair a ball mark, but it's surprising to me how many people don't know how to repair a ball mark, including pretty much everyone on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't stick it in the ground and lift up. You know, you don't pry it up. You twist and you push turf back to the middle. You don't pop up the mud in the middle, basically. I make it a point of, you know, repairing any ball marks I see that I have the time to fix, especially my own.
This is a pretty important little item to learn. I mean, I think that should be one of the first things you learn when you go out to the course, is get a little teaching. Have the pro in the shop tell you how to do it, and I'll run you through it. Real easy thing to get everyone repairing ball marks properly.
That's right.
You know, it's interesting, and I don't remember exactly where it was, but one of the magazines did an article, too, about, they did a study to see, well, does it happen more often on public courses or semi-private or private courses that they have the problems? And from what I remember, they had the problem more at private courses with a lot of those people those players not fixing their own ball marks.
I seem to remember it being slightly more at the public course, but very, very close. Surprising how bad it was. Something like 40% at best repaired any ball marks.
Right, and I could be wrong, but yeah, I remember you expected the private course to be so much lower, but it really wasn't.
I think it was lower, but only by 2% or something like that.
Okay.
So we may find that and link to that too. Morgan Pressel has called out Michelle Wee. She was given an exemption to the U.S. Open in 2004, finished tied for 13th, so she earned an exemption back in 2005, where she collapsed on the final day with an 82 to finish tied for 23rd. Top 20 in ties are exempt the following year, being 2006. Pressel says Wee should earn her way in by qualifying. David Fay, executive director of the USGA, says she may or may not do that. She's in limbo, he says. Should we have to qualify to play in the PGA, in the U.S. Open, the Women's Open?
I'll go first and say absolutely. I think Wee has phenomenal talent, but she needs to start earning her way into these events.
I agree with Everetta. I think he's exactly right. Just she hasn't done anything to warrant an exemption yet. I think she needs to prove it.
Yeah. I agree with you guys. I think she's become obviously the darling of the media, and she's got to at some point earn her stripes.
All right.
And in the end, I think it's just going to benefit her the most. I mean, she's going to learn how to start winning for herself and making cuts, and I think it's just in the end going to help herself out.
Everardo, you have your final Arizona story here to lead into.
Well, this one I'm not as happy to say, but yeah, I just don't understand why John Daly would have walked off the round. I mean, so what? He shot a 40 on his first nine. That's one thing I'm proud that I can say, and watching some of the other pros, is they've never quit, despite as much of a bad round. So it's kind of sad to see him. Understandably, John's got a lot of stuff going on in his life, with his fourth wife, Sherry, going to prison, his merchandise trailer being stolen, and then later on they actually did retrieve it, but I just don't see why he would walk off the course.
It just shows a lack of respect for the game, his playing partners. Whatever. I mean, he cited illness, but he seems to cite illness and walk off the course three or four times a year.
Right.
Well, there comes a point where he's got to, just participate as a golfer, you know, which you have to be above that. All of us know what it's like to melt down, so you gotta grind it and stick with it and see what you can do.
Mini Jeff, anything to say on this?
Well, I think that you've already said all that needs to be said.
This year marks the 35th anniversary of the golf shot on the moon. Pretty much the longest drive ever hit. I think I heard it went 710 yards based on estimates and calculations. He duffed a couple, but finally got his 6-iron up in the air. So
caught one clean.
Yeah.
Right.
The longest longest bunker shot in the history of, you know, I guess you'd have to say the universe, because you couldn't say the world, right? It's Earth's moon, but it's not part of Earth, so.
Yeah.
Until Bubba Watson peers one, maybe.
Right. So, we'll wrap up here with one. I'll do this quickly. I'll read it and then we'll talk about it. There is simmering speculation that Jack Nicklaus may not be done playing the Masters. Hootie Johnson could be urging Nicklaus to come back and play one final time. Last year Nicklaus said he was done, blah blah blah. This year would be the 20th anniversary of his 6th and final Masters triumph in 86 at the age of 46 or whatever he was. Nicklaus seemed to leave the door slightly open last week. Should Nicklaus come back and play another final Masters?
I don't have a problem with it, but I mean, he's got, you know, how many times does a guy retire?
Well, the Rolling Stones retired like 38 times, so maybe slightly less than that.
Okay.
And Cher's on 55,
and
so.
Kiss, and I don't know who else. So if he's taking any, you know, tips from musicians. He may be around for a while. I'm sure Tiger Woods wouldn't mind if he came back and retired again, given his record.
But, yeah, he wins every time he does it.
Right. But, yeah, I'm in the Nicholas, you retired last year camp. So
I am, too. I mean, he retired. Just go on.
Stay retired. Go fishing or something, man. That does it for episode 13 of the Golf Talk Podcast. Again, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. Check us out online at thesandtrap.com or visit our forum at thesandtrap.com/forum. If you, too, would like to join us like Mini Jeff did this week, you can find instructions for that in the forum. And we welcome anyone and everyone to come on the podcast as long as you speak
English.
We've
got to find another name for him than Mini Jeff, though.
Yeah.
Mini me.
We'll think of something. So, thanks for joining us and have a good week. Bye bye.
Bye bye.